This is take one of Code's podcast, one of a thousand. Yeah, Alex Wolf.
Yes, sir. Ryan Vera.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good. Good to start this with you. We talk a lot of codes all the time.
Yes.
All the time we use the word codes and downloads, and I don't know if I've ever uploaded anything. Probably. Yeah, okay, uploads. Good. Talk uploads, downloads. This is codes. I would say I met Alex about a year and a half ago. We met through some codes for sure, through connections and synchronicities and all that, and hit it off right away. And then I got to meet Jeff, and then here we are, business partners and working together and doing a podcast together. And it's been an honor to work with you and know you and go through all the different codes, whether they're good or bad or funny or hard. And we got this pretty cool company together, and Alex founded Eons, and we have the Circadian, and now we're launching codes. And this is why we're doing the podcast, so we can talk all about that and share our codes and share our products and share what we're doing and our ideas and everything. And my name is Ryan. I usually am a man of mystery. I don't like to talk about myself, but here we are. I was a former race car driver. I was extreme sport athlete, wingsuiter. I've lived many, many lives in the past, many different businesses, entrepreneurship, a lot of different plant medicine experiences over the last decade, working with many different plant medicines, which I'm really excited to have some episodes and talk about our experiences there and different codes that we get out. And now I am the CIO. So I am the chief intelligence officer, looking in the spirit world and the real world and the matrix and the reality, and updating the team and talking back and forth. And I've said by accident before, I remember I said to the Selena girl, so I was like, she was like, I'm the central intelligence. I mean,
Freudian slip.
It came out. But I work with Alex, and here we are doing this. So that's my little bit of introduction. I guess you'll get to know me as we go on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But Alex, Mr. Wolf, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, for you guys that don't know me, welcome. My name is Alex Wolf. I'll be your co-host here with Ryan. Serial entrepreneur, was executive and corporate pilot for many years, and learned many lessons along the way in different industries, and I'm applying all those lessons and blessings into our company that Ryan and I are partners in, and Circadian Wellness, with our first brand that we brought out last year called Eons, eons.com. And now we're working on codes, and you guys will hear that word a lot, codes. It has several different applications, and we're going to be talking all about them over the course of these podcasts, which I'm really excited to share with Ryan. He's got many codes to share. And I got a bunch to share as well with you guys. And so on that note, Ryan, if you had to sum it up, what is codes?
What is a code? I knew this question was coming. We always use the word codes, but I've never been asked what a code is, because it's so obvious what a code is. How about I explain it as an experience?
Sure.
We've all kind of experienced an epiphany before, right? And it's something that isn't thought of. It's not logical. A code isn't logical. It's almost like you're opening a key, maybe to something that you've always known, but you didn't remember, And it's kind of like when you get a code, it's like something you've been seeking, or it's like a missing piece. It's like a missing piece of the puzzle, and it allows you to see the entire puzzle. And I know this is like, it's not a technical term, but I like to speak on things more experiential that somebody has experienced before. So when you have a code, you didn't have it before, obviously. In this language is very much like computer language or video game language, right? That's what we talk about. And in a video game, what happens when you have a code or a cheat code or you get a code, you know, you kind of get a new path, a new upgrade, a new idea that helps you on your path, right? So you could say the codes, we collect the codes or we retrieve the codes in the game of life through epiphanies, through answers. You get codes through downloads, you know, you've been thinking, let's say like, I don't know the history enough, but we have Einstein, right? Einstein's there scribbling away and, you know, going back and forth and trying to figure out his mathematical equation. And he goes outside for a walk and he steps in a puddle and that puddle puts it all together. And he's like, oh my God, I have the answer. He got the code. No, I know there's that story. I'm not a big American history guy, but what's a guy, Adam, John Adams? I'm butchering this so much, but I remember this story. I remember this story of like guy sitting under a tree and an apple hit him on the head. And then
that's Isaac Newton.
Oh my God, I'm so bad. Isaac, was that Isaac Newton? Okay. Obviously, I didn't pay attention in school, but okay, I will not cut that part out. But, it is what it is. I think history is bullshit. This is the podcast. I think history is, you know, there's a phrase that, whoever wins the war writes the story, you know, writes the history.
His story.
Yep. His story. So it's all just stories, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to discern what stories are right. That's why you need codes to figure it out. A code of discernment. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the guy, you know, Isaac Newton was sitting under a tree, so-called story, and an apple hit him on the head and he got a code, right? What did that code do? What did it lead to, right? It helped him on his path. So that's a code to me. That's a code to me. What's a code to you, Alex?
Yeah, that's good. So, you know, like you're saying, it could be a random, quote-unquote random happening that happens, and you know you're just in the right place at the right time, and then you something appears to you, and then it's like a light bulb going off over your head. And in Isaac Newton's case, it was an apple hitting him in the head that led to some sort of, what was it, theory of physics or gravity or something like that. But
we are both so good.
Yeah, we both don't know that story too well, but yeah, it sounds you know, like what you're saying, Ryan, like an epiphany could be an insight that you get, or yeah, a piece of wisdom that changes your perspective. And then with that perspective shift, you're now looking in a new direction with a new lens. And in that new direction, now you're on, you know, you're looking in a new direction. Now you have a new trajectory on your, where your life is going because of this simple code, this simple upload or download of knowledge and or wisdom. And like I like what you said as well, we've talked about this, it's like a key, you know. And you could be traveling around in the game of life and getting to the same sort of obstacles and or like a door that are locked, and without the key, without this code, you won't be able to go on to the other side of this door. But a simple code will give you the answer to open up that door, and now this, you know, this door that could be very secured and closed down is now wide open for you, and that leads to a whole other set of paths and events and opportunities to experience. So it's, these codes are quite powerful for something that could be so small, could radically change your perspective, and then you're just on a whole new trajectory. That's inspiring.
Seems like it's all about the codes. Like what else?
It is all
that?
About the codes.
It's all about the codes. Yeah. It's like if you're not finding the codes, you're probably an NPC. You know, but there was, I didn't see this movie, but there was this movie. I saw the trailer. It was about, I think it was the same guy from, the same guy from, what's that red, the red guy with the samurai swords?
Oh, Kill Bill?
No. Like he had a red suit and it's like very dark humor. He goes around with samurai, two samurai swords on his back. He's like a superhero. Anyways, that actor, there's some movie about an NPC. He's like an NPC, and then he gets a code, and then he like starts seeing the video game. He starts seeing through reality. He starts seeing that he's like in a game. And like once he gets his code, once he's seen this, you know, oh, he puts on some glasses.
Oh,
He
yeah.
puts on some glasses. I gotta watch this movie. But he puts on some glasses and he sees he's in a video game. And once he has the code, he starts not becoming an NPC. So
Right.
there is if there's NPCs listening here, there is hope for you.
Yes.
Like
There's hope for you.
if you
Yeah.
follow the podcast, we'll be happy to drop a bunch of codes and then we'll have some
Yeah.
cool formulas to help pull you out of the matrix. Well, I mean that term is overly used. People think they're out of the matrix, but they're not, you know. I mean, to get out of the matrix, you and I know, there's like it's a lot of things we can talk about what the matrix is. It's not just reality, it's not just waking up, but you know, there's monetary system, there's consciousness, there's Admiralty Law, which is super interesting. LAW, land, air, water, you know, super
Nice one.
interesting. And it's not something you kind of like when it comes to the quality of codes, sometimes you get an epiphany and it kind of opens that door with the key to the code, but you're just beginning the path. And as you open that door and as you walk through the door, you kind of have to build that what that code is. You have to kind of like through your experience of walking through that door, you get to learn exactly what the code is until you keep it. You know, and then you get to take that code on to the next thing. So it's what do you remember a time when you got a really profound code, like a story or anything? I know
Yeah,
there's many,
absolutely.
but what's
Absolutely. The, you know, one, a big code for me, and I've shared this story before, but I'll share it again because just it's the first one that really, it was a big code for me that really changed my trajectory. And that for me is sometimes the weight of the code is just by how much it changed the path I was on. I was on one path, got a code, and now it's like, wow, I'm looking at life totally differently, like that guy you said from the movie, who I think was Roddy Piper, I think is the actor.
No, it's like
And
a new movie. I'm gonna look it up.
oh,
It's like
okay, because I
the
know there's a movie with the guy puts on the sunglasses and then
they
he
always
sees all
remake the movies, hey? They always like
oh.
a it's like a program. It's like the Matrix program. They like
Well, there's only so much
redo
IP to go around
codes.
until they get the new downloads. But yeah, we'll come back to that. The code for me, Ryan, that really changed my trajectory a long time ago, probably 21 years ago, was that fear is an illusion.
Yes.
And prior to that, I was very much living in with a certain type of fear that I was afraid of heights. You know, and that fear limited me, it limited my experience, it limited my beliefs, and therefore I wouldn't do a lot of things. You know, I wouldn't go on certain rides at roller coasters, I didn't really want to fly, therefore I didn't want to travel too much, which you could tell like it leads to a lot of limiting of experiences, all because I had some sort of experience when I was a kid that, you know, I accepted that I was afraid of heights. But it wasn't until I went on a, my parents kind of tricked me into going on a flying lesson. And, you know, I remember they brought me to a small airport. I'm meeting with an instructor and then he's taking me on an airplane and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And, you know, before you know it, I'm in an airplane and within minutes I'm taking off on the tarmac. And as we're taking off, the instructor says to me, you have control. And at that point, I had no choice but to really take control of the yoke on the airplane. And I just remember vividly grabbing the yoke and having no choice but to take control of the plane. And now all of a sudden I'm flying a plane, I'm ascending, I'm climbing, I'm looking out the window, and I'm like, wow, this is unbelievable. I never ever would have thought this would have happened. And now I'm flying a plane. And the instructor, you know, looks at me and whether it was true or not, he says, wow, you're a natural at this, you know? And instead of reaffirming my fear, I was just like, wow, okay, maybe I am. And I chose to believe him in that moment. and started flying the plane. And, you know, long story short, end up having this amazing experience flying around. He comes back, lands the plane. And now I'm just like, wow, my whole life, I was afraid of this kind of stuff. I was afraid to get up in the sky. And now I was like, considering myself good at it. And I was like, wow, this whole time I spent my life as in this illusion of fear. And that was a big code for me. That was a big paradigm shift for me, because I was like, if I'm afraid of this, what else am I afraid at? And I realized that it was just an illusion. It was just something that I was believing. And then on the other side of that fear was probably something really epic and magical, like flying.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah. Fear is not good. It is, it is a disease. Yeah. And through fear, but it's there for us to learn. It's something that the fact that you had fear gave you the opportunity to transcend it.
Yes.
And to find the code of surrender.
Yes.
Right.
That was also, code as well. Yes.
Yeah. It's because, I mean, once you let go, then you realize you don't control anything. Life is unpredictable. Life unfolds unpredictably. And I think the fear aspect inside of all of us tries to make the outcome controlled. And this is very much like where our mind gets in the way. The mind tries to get in the way of what we're trying to learn. And if we're always, it's funny that this story is very profound, because we always have a choice. And you every time that your fear showed up, it stopped you from going out, it stopped you from doing things, it stopped you from going there. But if we look at it, instead of saying it stopped you, we look at it like every time your fear came up, it gave you the opportunity to transcend it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the mind gets in the way and it starts thinking of the probable outcomes, what could happen, what could happen, what could happen, which is really just your consciousness exploring different probabilities. But we always have an opportunity to transcend that, but we have to find it. We have to find the code, right? The code was to let go and surrender of the fear. And then that got you to the next level. And as you said, it just, your trajectory really changed and your pilot. And I've heard some of your stories. You've told me some of your stories about being a pilot and they're nuts. You know, some of the stuff that you did is wild and I love it. But yeah, like I definitely, like myself too, from my base jumping, you know, especially, you know, when I started base jumping, and then it ended up a year later in Chirag, Norway, standing on exit 6, my first, you know, like skydiving is one thing. Like you get in the plane, your first 5 to 10 jumps are, you're nervous, you know, it's like, you're like up there and like you can play the tough guy all you want. You can be there and be like, yeah, I got this. And I remember when you first skydive, they jump out with you, the teachers, and they hold you and make sure you're stable. And the next jump, they kind of start letting you go and like making you do turns on your belly. And you're just super stiff like this. And I remember I was a spinner. My fourth jump, I would spin because I was trying to control the air. And it's funny, you're going terminal velocity at 120 miles an hour. And the air is pushing. It's like, have you ever put your hand outside the car while you're driving quite fast and you can shape, you know, if you put your hand flat like that, you can feel the air pressure. Obviously, you know, you're a pilot.
Sure.
But just for the listeners. But when you're falling, you have that air hitting you. And that's what you use to control your body and move you around. And it's very counterintuitive. So it's like one force one way pushes you the opposite way. And I remember I was spinning I was a spinner and spinner, and I couldn't gain control because I was trying too hard. And they put me with this new coach. And the new coach jumped down with me and he got right in front of me like this. And I could see him through his helmet and he went like this. He's like, don't forget to smile. And it made me laugh. It just made me laugh so much. And it just loosened up my whole body. I got the code. I was like, you don't fight this. You just,
right.
And from there, I aced it. I finished my course in the whole weekend. Obviously a year later, I went to Chirag, but it gave me so much momentum because I got that code and I went on to train and I got my license. And then I did a bunch of jumps, and then 4 months later, I wanted to do base jumping, right? That's why I started skydiving. And then I was, then it was the next, you know, it was the next thing. And in base jumping, you're jumping into dead air. So for the first 8 seconds, you're not terminal velocity. So the position that you jump off of is the position you are. So if you go too far head down or push off too much, you hold that position. And sometimes you go head down, which makes it more dangerous. Mm-hmm. But then I was standing on the edge of a bridge, which is not human, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, I have to jump. And I only have one parachute now. I don't have a backup. I had a backup mm-hmm. when I skydived. And you pack your own parachute. So one of the codes, one of the really special codes that I learned from base jumping, although there is fear, the fear is your friend. But you have to step in front of it, because the fear makes you check everything. Did I pack it right? Is this buckle done up? Are my laces done up? How is the wind? The fear keeps you alive. As long as you don't let it take over and get into their mind and start, you know, because you are thinking of, like, it's not a natural thing. Every excuse comes up, do it tomorrow, the winds aren't good, you don't have to do this, what are you thinking, like all these thoughts come up, right? You just got to learn to push it behind you. But when you're up there in base jumping, it's not a governing sport. Like skydiving is governed by, like, this very similar to aviation. Like, we have we're treated like airplanes. You know, they have to call up. One of the biggest things I learned with base jumping is pure responsibility. Because my skydiving rig takes about 7 or 8 minutes to pack. I have a backup. I have tons of altitude to worry about something. 3,500 feet is where we pull the parachute. But in base jumping, we spend about 45 minutes to an hour. You can get it lower once you get better, 30 minutes, 20 minutes. But packing our parachute, every fold, you know, and every crease, and like you don't have your phone with you, because if you make the wrong loop, you know, there's no backup, you have a problem, and you want it to open straight. So the bridge we were jumping off of is a 4.5 second to impact. Wow. Right. So like we jump, we get a little airspeed, and then we pull the parachute and we're open. And then obviously it's much slower to get down, but you know, like when you're standing there, you know that nobody's coming to save you.
Right.
You are 100% completely in control of your destiny, and you are 100% the person that's going to jump. Nobody's coming to save you, and nobody's going to make that choice for you. And you are 100% responsible for your life. And people think it's crazy. Like, I had a friend the other day.
Yeah. I just want to jump in there for one sec, Ryan. You brought up so many good points there. You please brought in do. So many good points. And, you know, fear is your friend. I really resonate with that. And I enjoy that even more than fear is an illusion, because if fear is your friend the whole time, that's there. And it sounds like, you know, he's trying to protect us, but he's also giving us the choice of, hey, are you ready to transcend this, or not? And, you know, maybe he thinks that we're not ready to transcend it. And then it's up to us to override that, or just choose that we are ready to open that door, you know, if we have a code at that point or if not. But would you say, you know, when fear is your friend, who is that friend? Who is that friend of fear? What is that voice? Where's that voice coming from?
I think it's... I think fear starts at a very instinctual layer, you know, like through our evolutionary cycle or whatever that looks like. I don't believe in the typical evolution theory with Darwin, but let's say it's built into our quantum human computer, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the human avatar. When you were saying that, I was thinking of a deer for some reason.
A deer.
Visualization came up of a deer, and you know, deer, when something's stalking a deer, the deer has a, you know, a sympathetic and a parasympathetic response. But when something stalks a deer, it sits up and looks and it hears, right? And then it kind of senses the layer of whatever that feedback is from its senses. And then the fear, and then it might see a wolf, or it might see a jaguar, but a cougar, right? And it comes up, and that fear gives it that, you know, that norepinephrine and adrenaline. Mm-hmm. It gives it that ability to like get away. Mm-hmm. And when the deer gets away, it doesn't stay, you know, sitting there, staying in fear. You know, it doesn't sit there and think about the cougar all day. You know, the nervous system calms down and it goes back to eating grass and doing whatever it does. But I think like when we get to this point, like if we're able to use fear with the instinctual mind more so at a physiological level as a feedback signal, then we're able to use that heightened awareness to check our surroundings, which seems like a very natural thing for us to do in any situation. But the ability to transcend that fear is to make it your friend by understanding like what you do with it, because you can take it like something can scare you and then you can get caught in your thoughts and you can loop your thoughts and it causes stress and traumas and everything, and you don't have the opportunity to actually explore what it was. And especially when you're in that like heightened fear state, you don't think well, you're not logically thinking well, and you go to instinct,
survival.
Yeah. And this is why like you train on a bridge when you base jump, because if you have a 180 or go under, like, and there's water underneath, you fuck up, like you can go under the bridge or water, but you train very fast instincts for when you do other jumps so that you don't even have a chance to think. But going back to that, what is fear and fear your friend? Fear is a great teacher to how you respond to it. I think it's like you can make it your friend by responding to it kind of like a friend, like you might tell me something that is dangerous or something like this that comes from a certain place. And then I trust you over time. You know, it's, this is off topic, but my son, you know, like we read the other day that in the first 4 to 7 months, he builds a trust with the mother, right? It's very important. Like when he cries, mother comes. When he's hungry, he gives him milk. Like that trust layer is very important to build during that time and that connection. Because like, I guess when they're 12, if mama's like, hey, if you don't do this, you're going to be poor. Or if you go over here, it's going to be dangerous or this, like they listen because that trust was built very early. So I think like, I think fear can also transcend to trusting yourself, you know, like, yeah, I know that was a little bit more complicated as an answer, but I mean, that's what came up. I don't know. I just saw a deer and it's just from my experience. It's like fear is a friend when you use it, like when it taps you on the back and it says, hey, look. And then when you go past that, it becomes like a foe, you know?
Right. It's almost like fear is your friend when he's pointing out an imminent danger.
Yeah.
You know, like the deer seeing a cougar or a predator. The fear is your friend when he's pointing out the danger that you're base jumping and there's limited time. There's danger there. There's real danger.
Hey, look.
And then
pay attention.
Look, pay attention. Exactly. Yeah. And that'll you know, bring us to attention here in a second. But in that moment of stimulus where the fear is like, okay, here there's danger. And now there's a space, there's opportunity for you to respond. Mm-hmm. And then it's your responsibility, your ability to respond in that situation and not get caught up by, you know, getting scared of what could happen if, you know, you don't respond in time. Cause then I guess there's a window of time there where you have to actually respond.
Mm-hmm. It's like, it's almost like, do you react or do you respond?
Right.
Yeah. Cause if you react, then you'd probably be unconscious and you get stuck in your thoughts of what if could happen. And it's kind of like they say, I never met they, you know, but let's just say they say, I've read an article, a few articles before about fear. It said 99%, it could be 92 or 93. They always change it on Google depending on what they want to do. Depending on the Mandelas. So let's say 99% of everything you worry about never happens.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think that?
Well, there's a few theories that I have. One is that, you know, you're by worrying about all these possible scenarios that your consciousness or maybe part of you is exploring these possibilities to happen, and then you've already explored them so that they don't need to happen. Because you're right. Most times if I do worry about something, that situation never ends up happening. But then I've just felt all the, you know, feelings and emotions that would come up with that dreaded circumstance. So yeah, why is that, Ryan? Why do you think
that is a code? I'm getting chills. That is a code. It's so crazy. One second.
Go.
The
battery codes are running.
There you go.
Out of your codes. Change the room around.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. It's where editing comes in.
All right. So that's a code. I got chills when you said that because it's very interesting. And I mean, people can go back and like re-listen. We can re-listen to things ourselves. But there's a major code there while you were saying it. Because like if 99% of the things that we worry about never happen, right? And like, I'm sure people will, you know, push back on that. But let's just say like in this probability is what you said was like, I've already worried about the thing I thought was going to happen. And then another thing was going to happen. Let's say like, for example, like something to do with work, right? You're at work and you know, you really hate your job and you think that, okay, if I quit my job, I'm worried I won't have money. And if I don't have money, like I might like not be able to eat and go poor. And let's say you're like 40 years old, 35, 40 years old. And you say like, well, if I quit my job, I don't like it. What if I don't find another job? And what if I can't pay my bills? What if I have this? And you have all these what ifs, right? And you're feeling it while you're going through it. You'd be like, what does that feel like if it actually happened? It'd probably feel very similar. You know, it might be a little bit more amplified, but you're going to feel a very similarity. So you're exploring it. You're visualizing it. You're exploring it. You're feeling the emotions. You're going through that with your imagination. And I mean, like, what's the difference of it happening in that? Like you're actually putting energy there, exploring it. And let's say you think like, okay, well, what if I stay at my job and I get a raise and things get better or they don't, but you know, you can explore that. It might feel a little dull or maybe you could quit your job. And as soon as you quit it, you know, because you quit it, that something has to fill that space. You know, something new and the biggest opportunity in your life comes, everything you've always thought of. You can explore all of these things, right? And like, while you're exploring with your imagination, you're feeling these things. And when you're feeling these things, you're getting more data. So you know what it's like if it happens. And once you've already felt it, it changes the way that you perceive your current situation, your current choices. So I think now that worrying is the inability or the unskilled person or individual to truly use their imagination efficiently.
So the worrier is just the unskilled. He hasn't tapped into the skills of his imagination. He hasn't polished up the skills of his imagination.
Well, I would say that nobody taught him to do that, but I would say like when we're children, we're very damn good at this. And somewhere along the line, somebody kept telling us, it's just your imagination. It's just your imagination. Read this book. This is the way. Worry about this. Like pretty much like you go into the schooling system, and it's very linear. And the schooling system was based on like teaching the working class, you know, industrial revolution. They teach you know, we have our
indoctrination.
Yeah, it's indoctrination and desensitization. You know, when you're a child, you have all this imagination. I remember as a child, I had this invisible room. I had like in my room, I would open this invisible door and I'd go play in this big white room. And I had toys in there and friends in there and everything. And like we moved to our house. And I freaked out and I made my parents go back to the house that new people lived in and go to the room. Cause I swear they like bolted the doors or they bolted it shut. That's my imagination. I don't even know. Who knows? Maybe next time I drink ayahuasca, I'll figure it out. But you know, like it seems that society is very interested in kind of numbing our natural child abilities, you know, to explore, mm-hmm. be creative, you know, and it kind of brings us into this fear state of mm-hmm. we have to work to survive, like you said, survival, right? But yeah, it and the fact that we're unskilled is because we didn't get to take it past like a young age.
Yeah, at certain age, they just shift us from imagination to linear, logical mm-hmm. mind, right? And yeah. I think it's at 6 or 7 years old, the subconscious mind basically starts to get shifted over to the conscious mind, and then it's all programming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I feel imagination, the more that we can polish that the skills around utilizing your imagination, the possibilities are endless. And then we're constantly mm-hmm. in that realm of possibility where literally anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really fun place to play. And I think that is like the space of the divine child, you know. Yes, and it's
very well said.
But there's it's to tap in with that divine child, but not maybe not identify with him too much as a grown man, because then you could get mm-hmm. caught up in boyhood fantasies versus, you know, showing up as an archetypal, you know, responsible male, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're saying there. What I was thinking when you were saying that too is like, obviously when we're born, we take on, as they call it, generational trauma, right? And what I like to call it is generational opportunity. It's because we might pick up fear when we're young, or we might, something that our mothers or fathers didn't complete or didn't have the tools to complete, they pass on to us naturally. It's kind of like, well, my mother was like this, or my father believed in money like this, or, you know, my mother had abandonment when she was young. So it's kind of imprinted on you. And then throughout your life, that plays out in your own relationships and your own business, right? And it's the same idea as the fear, right? Fear is there for us to transcend. So we have these opportunities, trauma opportunities, yes. that we need to find the codes, right?
Yes.
Transcend them. And it kind of completes it. So yeah, the imagination is going back to imagination. It's a tool. And when, as you're saying, like, if we identify too much as that, the child that hasn't like grown up and had the experience to mold these things, we could be playing out these generational traumas or opportunities without nuance, you know, without the experiences that we've had up. Cause we've obviously repeated video game levels before. Mm-hmm. We've dated that girl, and then we thought like never again. And then that scene, it's the new, oh, this girl's nothing like him. And then you get in there for a couple months, but God damn it. You know, but it's all like each time is like an evolution, right? It's there. So it's like,
you're playing that video game level with, you know, hopefully better skills at that time, but you got to get through that level to get to the next level. 100%. And otherwise you'll just keep replaying. It doesn't matter where you move to or what job you have, you're just going to find another human to replicate that pattern until you surpass it.
Until you get the codes. Yeah. And that's really codes, what embodiment is, right? Like when people say embodiment, you get that key to the code or key to the door, you open the door, and they have to figure out how to use that code and where it fits in. And as you go through the door, you embody the lesson. Like if you have, if your mother passed down like abandonment, you know, and then you get the key to that. And then through that, you know, you don't feel abandonment. You have to learn that. You have to learn that through your experiences, right?
Yeah. That's a great point. Like someone could give you a code or you could receive a code somehow, and that's just one part of it. But to actually embody it is to utilize the code and put that key in the lock. You know, for every lock, there's a key. And until you do that, and maybe multiple times, it's really just half the battle. Like, you know, G.I. Joe, knowing is only half the battle. You got to you could have lots of codes, but not embody them. And that's really, you know, I'd say 50% of it is embodying the codes and yeah. being the codes.
Yeah. Because we see our peers and our friends and some people that we're attracted to, or some people that we follow have already embodied these codes. Right. But then they don't have the same, they have their own codes they're mm-hmm. working in.
Right.
And I mean, like, I know one of the things that I embody very well is I trust myself so much. You know, I trust myself enough to jump off a cliff, right? So
for sure,
that's something that I really embody. And there's things that I don't. And there's things that I seek, and my business partnerships and my relationships and my friendships, like, they reflect back to me things that I can learn from other people that might have gone through the journey to get the code. You know, and then they can reflect and teach back. And the funny thing is that as a unique as we are, a lot of us, you know, have similar codes we're trying to work on. That's why they resonate so much, you know, different levels though, right? Mm-hmm. Different extremes or polarities, the amount that needs to be learned, but that's the video game.
That's the game. Yeah. It's really accumulating the codes and then applying them and then accessing new levels. And then what's next? Showing your friends and family how to use these codes by being an example, and hopefully they catch on that, you know, these codes are useful.
They're like hints, you know, when you're saying that, they're like hints in a game. You know, you're playing like Zelda or something, you get little hints to find the code, and like the people you interact with, like you might react to somebody, you know, they might trigger you and they don't react back. That's a hint, you know. It's like, and then you think about it all day, and then you feel bad, like, oh, why did I react instead of respond? It's a little hint along the way. And I think this reality and this plane or this universe or whatever, this video game, it's here to support us always. And it's just like, it depends on our lens and what we're looking at and our attitude and what we, and our beliefs, obviously. But like, there's always hints everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everything's always trying to, like, you know, it's like when you think of somebody and then they call you, or like synchronicities that come together, or like that thing just shows up. You are the master at this, Alex. Like, you, you just
always attract
everything that we need. I know you're always a student, but you're pretty damn like, I don't know. You're born with this.
I'm like samurai level student.
Samurai level. Point. Yeah. Always a student. I love that you said that, because approaching everything as a beginner is the best way to do this. It's Eastern philosophy, right? You're always absorbing.
Yes. Always but open.
It does. You know, it's cool to watch. It teaches.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. No, I appreciate that very much, but you brought up something here that really, you just activated a code for me, was that this universe or world, you know, game, life game called Earth is very supportive. And that belief, that code, that acceptance of that truth, I believe is one of Einstein's, like, his greatest codes that I'm almost positive it rings a bell, that is, like, if you believe, or once you accept that this world is here to help you and it's actually supportive, it totally changes your paradigm around. And I'm 99% sure it's Einstein, and it reminds me of how I went through my life, you know, early stages of my life, it would be like, why is this happening to me? And then it shifted from, why is this happening to me, to, oh, this is happening for me. Everything was for my greater expansion. And then now, to a point where I've even expanded past that to, like, this is happening by me. Like, my being is, I'm not saying I'm controlling, you know, I'm not controlling my life, but it's like, my actions will play a factor on what happens. You know, it's all connected. And I just wanted to bring up that point. You said that this universe is a supportive universe. It is here to support. And that's very apparent in nature, always expanding.
Yeah. That's that code is an advanced one. It's something that, I think a lot of people strive, but it's just out of their reach, you know, and I've heard this before, like, things are happening, going from things are happening to me to things that are happening for me. Mm-hmm. Who's the one, you know, who's the doing it for you? And this is where,
right,
you know, people, you get to a stage where you reach outside, you know, you reach outside for help. Mm-hmm. So you're like, I need this help, or something's doing the for me, source or signal, or these things are doing it for me. And then you kind of take the next step in the stage, be like, well, I am that frequency, you know, mm-hmm. and like, I create everything. And I'm creating it for myself to explore. And this is an interesting jump here, because we talk about the video game. When we talk about the video game, we talk about, like, there has to be a video game character. The video game character goes to the level, you know, and like, let's say it's like an adventure game, and there's a point to the level. And you have to go into the level, and you have to find the hints, and you have to find the codes to pass the level. And if you don't find the codes, you have to repeat the level. And you want to get to the next level because you wouldn't have the skills for it. So the first level gives you the skills to open up the new level. And it's kind of like, if you're working on something with fear or a trauma or a worthiness program or something, once you find that code and embody it, you're going to open up the next level. And that worthiness is going to help you like achieve that next level or work through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wonder like, well, I'm not the character in the video game. When I'm playing a character, I'm not the character. I'm the player.
You're the player, yeah.
I'm the player playing the character, but I can't talk to him. I can't yell through the TV screen and be like, hey, go left. I have my little controller.
Yeah.
You know, and my controller goes jump left, right, whatever. But what if we looked at the controller as like insight or intuition, you know? So... are the codes are actually, you know, could they, do you think they're provided by you? Maybe that's the person that looks through the lens of the video game character. And then you think as the character, which is, you know, an embodied consciousness playing Alex or playing Ryan, does that character know more than the player?
No.
Right.
And I would say no.
What if you said like the player was the soul, just for fun, the spirit,
the soul. Right, the player would know more. Yeah, yeah.
Always, yeah. And like, does your soul know better than you?
Chances are.
Right. And do you trust that your soul is creating through you, you know, everything that you need to complete that level or learn that lesson that...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it goes back to, you know, when you say like, I'm the one creating everything, you're speaking at a level of embodiment where you said with Einstein, you know, it's like, then, you know, everything's there to support you because, you know, the life unfolds unpredictably, like the adventure level, we don't know what it's going to be or what it's going to happen. And then. But the player is there watching our back. You know, it's like, I need to learn how to use my sword before I go fight the bad guy. So I'm going to go and, you know, fight all these little guys before I get to the bad guy. Or I need enough gold coins to buy this magic potion so that I have it for the next level. And that could be like worthiness potion, you know, or love, you know. So it's interesting, like to think of it like that. And like I said, like there's codes everywhere. There's hints everywhere. Like everywhere in Einstein, in Isaac, not Adam, under the tree.
Yeah, you know? Isaac Newton, in nature, in animals, in books, everywhere. Like you said, everything can be a possible hint to a code. And we need these codes to get to the next level of the game.
Yeah, and then it becomes the human experience, right? And it kind of takes a little pressure off when you think of it that way, right?
Right.
When we're kind of locked into our personality or as an NPC, as we were saying, and like props to all the former NPCs that figured it out. But it lightens it, you know, the energy lightens when you're kind of like, okay, like everything is here to support me on this journey. And like the only thing getting in my own way is me.
Right. Yeah, that's a big one.
But that's like that. There's no perfection there, because once you get out of your own way completely, there's no more game.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
Then there's
it's
no
like
more game. Yeah. Then you probably come back again, or who knows?
you need the challenges and the resistances and all of these things in order to like transcend that. It's
Of
like
course.
I
It's
it's
a gift.
you ever had the time in life? Have you ever have here's a question for everyone listening. Have you ever been at a time in your life where everything there was no problems? No challenges.
Depends how you look at it, you know? Like I could look at my moment in life right now and be like, I have no challenges. I'm sitting here on a podcast and here I am, you know? And then but then as soon as we exit this podcast and I pick up my phone or I go outside and I will be faced with, you know, what can be seen as challenges.
Yeah, well put. Yeah, well put. Yeah, it's I've almost been in a state before where I'm picturing a time where I'm going to have no challenges, like some fantasy in the future. Where like, yeah, when I get to this point, I'm like, it's all going to be
yeah.
good. When this happens and this happens and this happens,
that's an like, illusion for sure.
It's funny, but I think all of us get trapped there, here or there, you know. And
of course,
when you look around, it's like there's always challenges, right? And like our story, but our memory is full of lessons. You know, it's like
yes.
our experiences are full of lessons to teach us that, like, hey, it's like this is the game of life. And I know I've brought this up to you before. Like, my son is my greatest teacher. You know, he's 10 months old now. And like in the first few months, he had gas, you know, and he couldn't sleep and he was crying and it hurt. And like the gas didn't go away, but he just got better at dealing with it. You know, and they stopped crying and he started sleeping. It was uncomfortable. And then he learned how to like poop.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's how he learned how to poop, was like by building his gut biome and like moving around and like matching like his sound to his poop. Like, it was funny. He'd go, and nothing would come out, but now he's a pro. You know, he's
yeah.
like, I know it's a funny example, but it's like, it's just so true to me. It's such a code to me. And like,
for sure.
As a father, it's like you see like how you learned everything, you know. It's like
it's all these things, all these challenges are what qualifies us as human beings. They end up being our, and our greatest challenges end up being our greatest qualifiers to be able to speak on something or to show someone the way or to, you know, even be professional at something. Usually you have to go through this challenge and it qualifies you. And you know, I feel like what you're saying there is life doesn't necessarily get easier. We just get better at dealing with the challenges. And in probability, it probably actually just gets more challenging because we're just opening ourselves up to more possibilities of challenge, you know, things that are, and what is a challenge really is just something that, you know, is a bit outside of our skill set or a bit outside of our scope and we need practice on, or it's something that we're not, maybe it goes against one of our preferences, you know, we prefer things to be less challenging and now, so that therefore it's challenging, but it's really just how it is. And if and when we have the skill set to face it, then it's not so challenging anymore, you know, and then it's just like, it's routine. So now you bring up a really interesting point that I don't know if it, I don't think it gets easier. It might just get more challenging on our perspective that more things just come our way. And then we just get better at, you know, juggling these balls or managing these circumstances.
Yeah. It's like you learn how to crawl. You don't want to crawl your whole life. At some point you got to learn to walk, but you know,
yes.
Now he's almost ready to walk. He's fallen down and like the dynamic's interesting because mama wants to go protect him. I was just let him fall, you know, just like let him like bump his knee and stuff. Right. Cause it's like, he's got to learn, you know, he's got to learn that there's consequences in life and it's easier to learn that way. But yeah, like I don't know, but I do know about you, but like you took that first flight and you're like, okay, let's stay safe. You know, like just you got into flying your planes and it's just like, okay, just take this pattern. The whole time I know you played around, I know you you got up there and you're like, oh, let's see what happens if I like turn the plane off, or if like, do a dive, or if I
all
like
kinds.
Or if like I'm really interested, I would love it not this podcast, but I can't wait till you tell your story about, you know what I'm talking about with the,
yeah,
if it's legal to tell. I don't know if it's like, that's,
I don't cool think story. They could come back to me, you know, 15 years later of all the crazy shit I did in the sky. I hope not anyway, but we'll definitely get into it. I look forward to it, Ryan. We're almost out of time here.
Yes,
so
yes.
This was great, and gives the audience a sneak peek of some of the topics and, you know, discussions we'll get into. You obviously have a plethora of knowledge that can be tapped into, so that's really exciting. And there's lots of codes for us to share and discuss. So I'm really excited and really honored to be able to do this with you.
Yeah, brother. Super honored. And yeah, we definitely we've had a lot of deep conversations behind the scenes about things, and I'm really excited to kind of bring that out because it's so cool, like what we can uncover and what we can do with codes, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's been a pleasure. Yeah. So tune in next. We'll fill in that part.
Yeah. 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 And there'll be many more codes to come.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Join us next week when we dive into the code of trust. What that means at a deeper level. How is it a code? How is it embodied? And when are we actually looking for that as a desire unconsciously? Where to find it in our life? We go into our personal experiences, how we've learned this code, the aspects of how we use this code, and some deeper sense of understanding and energetics behind the word. You can follow us on Instagram at codes.podcast for more updates, codes, and podcast clips. Until then.